I hope
because
so.
I think
it's
absolutely, absolutely delightful.
I have thoughts.
But yeah.
Well, and that makes me think of, if you think about television productions or even radio productions, they probably have these stock recordings of audience applause.
Yeah.
So I love that idea of doing an actual, you know, looking at the real applause and understanding what all the different flavors of that are.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. And it's such an interesting, it really is one of those things that like,
hey, it's Pamela from Pine Hill. You're listening to WGXC Acra, Hudson, Catskill, 90.7 FM.
Director of the John Cage Trust,
bringing you a deep dive into the intriguing life and work of Renaissance man John Cage, celebrated composer, poet, philosopher, chess pupil of Marcel Duchamp, life partner of Merce Cunningham, macrobiotic chef, exponent of Zen, visual artist, and avid and pioneering mycologist. Tune in to All Things Cage, 7 p.m. Saturdays beginning January 2nd, for conversations with cage experts and enthusiasts from around the world, right here at Wave Farms WGXC 90.7 FM, radio for open ears, and via the web at wavefarm.org.
WGXC underwriting support is provided in part by Sun Common, supporting vibrant communities across New York for 15 years, offering custom solar installations for homes, farms, and businesses. Information at suncommon.com.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Friday Night Racer of Hartsdale, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. Become a WGXC sustaining supporter today. Go to WGXC.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
You are tuned to 90.7 FM, WGXC. Like good old tap water. Just turn it on and get it.
The Daily Freeman reports that voting this year goes from October 29th through November 8th. On October 29th through November 6th, ballots will be cast at a limited number of locations and then is at precincts on November 8th. Early voting will be available from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Early voting will be available from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. on Friday, November 4th, Saturday, November 5th, and Sunday, November 6th. It will be available from noon to 8 p.m. on Thursday, November 3rd. In Greene County, voting October 29th through November 6th will be at one location, the fourth floor of the Greene County Office Building on Main Street in Catskill. In Columbia County, there are two locations for voting, 401 State Street in Hudson and the Martin H. Glenn Municipal Building at 3211 Church Street in Valencia. In Ulster County, voters may cast their ballots at the Midtown Neighborhood Center, 467 Broadway, Kingston, at the Ellenville Public Library, 40 Center Street, Ellenville, the Marlborough Town Hall, 21 Milltown Turnpike, Milltown, the New Platts Community Center, 3 Veterans Drive, New Platts, the Saugerties Senior Center, 207 Market Street, Saugerties, and the American Legion, 2628 Mountain Road, Shokan. In Dutchess County, voting through November 6th is at the Mid-Hudson Library Auditorium, 105 Market Street. In Poughkeepsie, East Fishkill Community Library, 348 Route 376 in Hopewell Junction, the Cornell Cooperative Center, 2715 U.S. 44 in Millbrook, the Broadmen Road Library, 141 Broadmen Road in Poughkeepsie, the Fishkill Town Hall, 807 Route 52, the Rhinebeck Town Hall at 80 East Marcus Street, and the Wappinger Town Hall at 20 Middlebush Road. Read the full story in the Daily Freeman. From the WGXC Newsroom, this is the WGXC News Update. Nick Reisman reports for New York State of Politics that a Spectrum News 1 Siena College poll released November 4th shows Democrat Josh Riley 5 points ahead of Republican Mark Molinaro in their contest to represent the new 19th Congressional District. An October 6th poll showed a similar lead, both within the poll's 5% margin of error. Then Riley led Molinaro 46% to 41%. Now Riley polls 48% support for 43% for Molinaro. Riley is from near Ithaca, while Molinaro lives outside of the district in Dutchess County. Poll has Republican candidate for governor Lee Zeldin leading Democrat incumbent Kathy Hochul inside the district 50% to 45%. The geographical area favored Democrat Joe Biden by 4 percentage points over Republican Donald Trump in 2020. Voting continues through November 8th, And you can read the full story at New York State of Politics. Mid-Hudson News reports that Dutchess County Supreme Court Judge Christy D'Alesso ruled November 3rd that Dutchess County Republican Elections Commissioner Eric Haidt must follow state law and establish a polling place on the campus of Vassar College. The League of Women Voters, Mid-Hudson Region, and a Vassar student and professor brought the lawsuit. Haidt has lost several lawsuits about his policies to prevent college students at both Bard and Vassar colleges from having their own polling places. County taxpayers have shelled out more than $120,000 in legal fees in Haidt's repeated defeats over issues at Bard and Vassar. D'Alesso wrote in her opinion that, and I quote, the plain language of Election Law G4-104(5-A), which includes the word shall in quotes, as opposed to may or should, specifically mandates the designation of a voting polling place on a college or university campus where, as here, the petitioner demonstrated that the college or university campus contains 300 or more registrants to vote at an address on such college or university campus, end quote. Haidt has not yet decided his next step, telling Mid-Hudson News that he is, and I quote, reviewing the decision with my attorney, David Jensen, that was just issued a few minutes ago to determine our next steps, end quote. Read more about this story at Mid-Hudson News. Raymond Pignon reports in Columbia Green Media that Stoutsville's Church of St. Joseph holds its last Mass on November 5th. Albany Diocese spokesperson Kathy Barron said, and I quote, St. Joseph is not technically closed in the eyes of the church. It is still a sacred building designated for divine worship, end quote. But declining attendance since the start of the COVID-19 pandemic means there won't be regular services any longer at the Roman Catholic Church. It is unclear whether the food pantry operated by St. Joseph will remain open. Building of the church began 100 years ago, with services beginning in 1925. Barron said, and I quote, what is going to happen to the church? We really don't know, end quote. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com. And that wraps up the WGXC News Update. You can visit our website at WGXC.org for local weather updates, public meetings, a community calendar, or COVID-19 updates. And while you're there, please click on the donate button to become a WGXC sustaining supporter or make a one-time donation. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a nice weekend.
Make America Great at Last. I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! With Dennis Moynihan and our weekly Breaking the Sound Barrier podcast. Political violence is on a bloody and disturbing rise in the United States. Early Friday morning, an intruder broke into House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's San Francisco home, attacking her 82-year-old husband, Paul, with a hammer, fracturing his skull. The intruder, David DePape, 42, was arrested. DePape's online presence is a horrifying mix of conspiracy theories, racism, election denial, and anti-Semitism. Where's Nancy? Where's Nancy? DePape screamed at Paul Pelosi using a phrase chanted in the U.S. Capitol during the January 6, 2021 insurrection. Pelosi managed to call 911, leaving the call connected so the dispatcher could hear as he tried to negotiate with the intruder. The dispatcher called on the San Francisco police to conduct a wellness check. DePape attacked Pelosi as the police arrived and was quickly arrested. Pelosi was rushed to the hospital with a fractured skull. DePape has been jailed, charged with multiple state and federal crimes. In a primetime address at Union Station in Washington, D.C., President Biden said,
we don't settle our differences in America with a riot, a mob, a bullet, or a hammer. We settle them peaceably at the ballot box.
That's how it's supposed to go. Donald Trump's demagogic takeover of the Republican Party and his lie that the 2020 election was stolen has propelled the United States into a dark and dangerous era. Racism, xenophobia, Christian nationalism, and a welter of other bigotries are being whipped up by Republican officials desperate to hold on to power. This toxic stew is backed by an increasingly well-armed and radicalized right-wing minority, masking their criminality behind self-styled militias and patriotic slogans. Make America great again, Trump proclaims, never saying when in our painful, tumultuous history America was, in fact, great. That phrase's acronym, MAGA, has been embraced by Trump supporters and his many detractors as both a battle cry of the right and a catch-all warning used by defenders of democracy.
You know, American democracy is under attack because the defeated former president of the United States refused to accept the results of the 2020 election.
Biden said Wednesday night.
And he's made a big lie, an article of faith in the MAGA Republican Party, the minority of that party. They've emboldened violence and intimidation of voters and election officials.
Since Trump's 2020 loss, threats against election officials have intensified. The Brennan Center for Justice issued a report in 2021 that detailed reports from states across the country of numerous confrontations and threats against election workers, many laced with racism and anti-Semitism. Republican state legislatures accelerated the voter suppression crusade, passing scores of laws aimed at restricting access to the vote. Early voting, mail-in voting, voter ID laws, and even in Georgia, a law making it illegal to provide water to someone waiting in line to vote have all been enacted. A Reuters Ipsos poll released last week found 2 in 5 voters are concerned about the threat of violence or intimidation at polling places during these midterm elections, and that 2/3 of registered voters expect extremists to carry out acts of violence if they're unhappy with the election results. In Arizona, masked armed vigilantes wearing body armor were monitoring a 24-hour ballot drop box location. The League of Women Voters of Arizona went to federal court and won a temporary restraining order against the voter intimidation group known as Clean Elections USA. Maricopa County Board of Supervisors Chair Bill Gates and County Recorder Stephen Richer issued a joint statement that included the line, which itself serves as a measure of how bad things have gotten, quote, "Don't dress in body armor to intimidate voters as they're legally returning their ballots," unquote. So far, at least 6 instances of voter intimidation have been reported to the Justice Department by Arizona's Secretary of State. In rural Nye County, Nevada, election deniers suspicious of ballot scanning devices successfully compelled the county to adopt hand counting of ballots. The county clerk resigned in protest. The hand counting has not been going well. Human errors abound and the process has been ordered halted, but not before Nye County Republican Party Central Committee Vice Chair Laura Larson, wearing a gun, ejected a legal election observer from the ACLU, attempting to confiscate the person's notes. The attack on Paul Pelosi was part of a failed attempt to either kidnap or assassinate House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, second in line to assume the presidency. In response, prominent Republicans from Virginia Governor Glenn Youngkin to Arizona gubernatorial candidate Carrie Lake to Donald Trump Jr. joked about the Pelosi attack. Normalizing and inflaming political violence, as Donald Trump and his Republican enablers are doing, ensures more bloodshed. The resilience of our democracy depends on free, fair, and vigorous participation from all eligible voters. Political violence must be condemned and countered with massive voter turnout. I'm Amy Goodman with Dennis Moynihan.
And now here is your WGXC weather update. Your forecast for the weekend. Well, on Saturday, it will be mostly cloudy with a temperature high near 73 degrees. And on Saturday night, a slight chance of showers after 2 a.m. Otherwise, it will be mostly cloudy with a temperature low of around 61 degrees. And on Sunday, a chance of showers mainly after 5 p.m. Otherwise, it will be mostly cloudy with a temperature high near 73 degrees. And Sunday night, a chance of showers mainly after 11 p.m. It will be mostly cloudy with a temperature low of around 59 degrees. And that is your weather update from WGXC. 90.7 FM, radio for open ears in Greene and Columbia counties.
Most radio shows don't come with a demonstration, but most radio shows aren't Radio Wonderland.
Greatest hits.
Right, so then I take more pieces of live radio, slice them, fit them into the groove, and then in a few minutes you get something like...
In LA, some restrictions apply.
It's radio made completely out of radio. I'm Joshua, but you just call me Radio Wonderland.
10:30 a.m. Saturday mornings till 11.
Some restrictions apply.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Nora E. Edelman of Athens, New York. Sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You, too, can become a WGXC sustaining supporter by investing in community radio every month. Go to wgxc.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
WGXC believes in creative use of the airwaves. WGXC is a program division of the nonprofit arts organization Wave Farm, based in Acre, New York. We are the only station in the country to dedicate significant airtime to radio as an artistic medium. Tune in to transmission art and experimental sound programming overnight and on Saturdays, and hear artists from all over the world who sculpt and compose with the airwaves.
You are tuned to 90.7 FM, WGXC. Hands-on, listener-supported radio for Greene and Columbia counties.
Rehearsing and nursing a part, we know every card by heart. Overture, curtain lights, this is it. We'll hit the heights, and oh, what heights we'll hit. On with the show, this is it.
We'll be right back.
Next, we tune in the latest episode of the I Have Seen Niagara radio theater show from G. Lucas Crane and Rick Royer. The show airs Saturday mornings on the WGXC Morning Show between 9 and 10 a.m. and every early Wednesday night just after midnight.
Niagara Falls, city of wonder, city of light. A city where nature's full range of sublime power and terrific beauty are on display. From the Maid of the Mist to the Devil's Hole. From Suicide Point to the country's largest sect of traditionalist, mystic, psychic, hydroculturalists. There's too much to enjoy in just one day. So stay a night with us, or stay forever right here at Hotel Niagara.
Uncle knows how much this trip means to me. Most boys my age have already become men in our community. Some have even taken wives and assumed prominent roles in the farmhood. But my passage to maturity has been waylaid by my weak heart and a proneness to boils. So to accompany my uncle, the most respected figure in the Isidorian community, on a long journey to survey some land in Canada that may indeed be our future home, fills me with profound pride. We have been driving northeast from Ohio on a hot summer day for about 6 hours. So far on the journey, there's been very little conversation. Uncle knows better than to waste words when they're not necessary, but I can't wait to rattle off the many stories from our travels when I return home to my friends and siblings, like when I saw the crazy three-wheeled motorcycle or the green dinosaur statue at the gas station. That was funny. I don't know much about this trip. Uncle only told me we were meeting some other Isidorians to potentially purchase several acres of fertile green land, with many a gully for the farming of water. I've heard rumors of a massive project in the works, where Isidorians from across the country are joining up to cross over to the other side together. The other side of the border, I'm assuming. On the peninsula where the mighty Niagara River meets Lake Ontario. There is a nearby colonial-style town there, I'm told, where we can sell our produce and crafts and distribute The Sunflower, our monthly newsletter of water, agriculture, and faith. The location also happens to sit near what our holy books refer to as hydroterrestrial correspondence points of divine energy, which converge close by. Uncle knows that this is the right time to move the community. A move like this would offer a new beginning. Not only have we outgrown our homestead in Ohio, but our community has struggled greatly of late since the terrible disappearance of my young cousin Elijah last summer. As for me, I am giving my all to suppress my uncomely hopeful giddiness. The trees along the highway go by in a blur, but the miles cannot be covered fast enough, as I just cannot wait to be one of the first to set eyes on this new land of promise, where I may one day raise a family and pull my firstborn from the rising water of a deep well, just like Saint Isidore. We are now entering New York State, and the feeling in my heart is growing more intense and may not be entirely attributable to anticipation. When I press my hand to my chest, I feel my heart pound with no discernible rhythm. It is more like a spasm than a beat, and there is an annoying twitch underneath each eyelid. As I close my eyes, I see colors that I have never seen before or imagined, slowly expanding outward, colors and patterns bleeding into each other, creating spirals, marbling, and sometimes exploding and dissolving like a show of fireworks. Time is flickering. Here now, out now, here now. I open my eyes, but instead of the highway in front of me, I see my sister's face, smiling into a white beam of crystal sun. The animals from our farm seem to be smiling also. Beyond them in the distance, I see a woman in white running on water with two hounds beside her. And now there is nothing. I cannot move. I am paralyzed. No, I have completely shut down. Everything has let go. I am not alive. My eyes have closed, but I can still see everything around me in some sort of wide circle of vision outside of my body. I see my uncle sitting next to me, totally unaware of my passing. I didn't even have a chance to say goodbye to him. I didn't say anything at all. I was too distracted by the sensation of dying for it to properly register as death. I never really got to know Uncle and assumed this time spent with him would be a chance to learn about him and from him. Instead, he barely said a word to me, and now here I am, lifeless in the seat next to him. I wish there was some way to communicate with him now, but it doesn't seem possible. I am completely severed from my body, as if trapped in a frightening dream from which I cannot wake. But this is not a dream, and I am not afraid. I have been dead for nearly 2 hours now, and Uncle has yet to realize it. My head has fallen to the side, with my mouth gaping wide open, a position that one could easily interpret as deep sleep. The last sign on the road said we were entering Buffalo. That was 20 minutes back. And now Uncle is pulling off into a service station. He mumbles something about urination. My lack of response does not seem to faze him. We pull into the parking lot. Uncle gets out and stretches his arms and back. He pulls a bottle of juice from a pocket in the car door and finishes it. He opens the back door and tosses the empty bottle in. He grabs some seeds from a Ziploc bag while he's back there and pops them into his mouth. He chews and looks down at his feet on the hot pavement. Finally, he addresses my corpse.
"Okay, Joseph, time to wake up now,"
he says from the outside of the open door. He ducks inside the car from the driver's side, slightly annoyed, and shakes my shoulder good.
"Joseph, hey, Joseph. Joseph?"
My head rolls back on my neck and lands with a thud against my window. Uncle simply nods. He looks to see if there are any people around and now slides back into the car.
"Joseph,"
he whispers, shakes me rough, licks his fingers to check my pulse, nods again. Uncle now starts the car, but only drives it a few yards back into the service area parking lot where there are no cars around. He is rolling his phone in his hand, unsure if he should use it or not. Uncle knows that he can't call an ambulance right now. Authorities will not allow him to continue transporting my body, and it's against our religion to allow a body to be handled by someone other than a member of our faith, or to inject a body with chemicals and all that stuff they put in a body before burial. Our natural bodies must be tossed in a river as soon as possible after death. Uncle fully reclines my seat to make it look all the more as if I am sleeping. He cracks a window, and he walks towards the service area, disappearing into a building that says it has a McDonald's, a Sparrow Pizza, a Burger King, a Starbucks, a pretzel factory, and a Frank's Loaded Taters, all under one small roof. Even though we are prohibited from eating this kind of food, it's too bad that I cannot join my uncle to experience such a fascinating place. Uncle has now been in the service area for more than 40 minutes. He must be collecting his thoughts and making arrangements for how to handle the situation. Many thoughts have gone through my own head, if it is indeed my head that thoughts go through now, but they are surprisingly removed from feelings. I can say that I will miss my family. I can say that I am afraid of what's next. I can say that I am disappointed that my life has been cut so heartbreakingly short. But honestly, I would only be saying these things. I have no feeling about any of it, really. No sadness, no fear, no real longing. Suddenly, everything just is, and I cannot force myself to feel any other way about it. So far, death is not quite what our holy book said it was going to be like. But as with everything else, I don't feel anything about it. All I feel is a strange openness, as if my spirit self is one big orifice. My uncle is now emerging from the service area, carrying a bag. It is a bag from McDonald's. He opens his door and places the bag on the floor beside his feet. Uncle must have been so very hungry from grief at my passing that he had to break our usual dietary restrictions and choose hot, substantial food over the breads and dried fruits that we have packed for the journey. He starts the engine, eats some fries that he had stored in his shirt pocket, picks at his ear, looks at me, and races back out onto the highway, causing my head to do a full circle until it lands squarely on the dashboard. We've reached the last exit before the border, in Niagara Falls, New York. Uncle must realize there is no going further. He knows he cannot bring a dead body across the border. This is as far as we go. He pulls into a motel. The sign looks old and melted. The name of the establishment is indiscernible. There are no other cars in the parking lot. There's an ice machine, a sun-bleached old pop vending machine, and a huge mound of discarded belongings taking up two parking spots. This is not any kind of place that people in our community usually stay, but these are extreme circumstances, and Uncle knows best. He hurries into the motel office, which, like the rest of the motel, looks abandoned. But he inserts a coin into a large bronze machine on the desk, and a key pops out. Uncle returns to the car, collects his McDonald's and a small travel bag, and heads into the motel room, leaving me in the car. I am alone and dead, which is no different, I have come to understand, from being dead and in the presence of others. Uncle has been in the motel room for nearly an hour. Everything has been very quiet. There hasn't been any activity in this motel. Uncle has occasionally opened the door of the room to check on the car. He does this again now, looking to the left, then the right. He is thinking. He approaches the car this time and opens the door to check on me. It's quite late at night, but the temperature has barely dropped. I can't say that my body is smelling very good in this muggy air. Some of what was inside of me has also leaked out. Not a lot. Just a slow release of some excess pee and poop. Enough to make an enclosed area disagreeable. And that is apparent from my uncle's facial expression. He leaves me, but quickly returns with a sheet. He wraps my body in it the best he can, continually keeping a lookout around the parking lot. Then he pulls me out of the car. I'm half hanging in, half hanging out, all twisted up in the sheet, which is now barely covering anything. He wraps my arm around his head and lifts me up, carrying me like a big swaddled baby in his arms. I like that. He struggles, but reaches the room, closing the door behind him with his foot and dropping me as gently as he can on the carpet. He drags me by my ankles to the bathroom and lifts me up into the tub. He turns on the shower, letting it run cold on me while he runs out of the room, grabbing a small plastic garbage can on the way out. He returns with that garbage can filled with ice from the motel ice machine and dumps it into the water with me. Uncle can now relax a bit. He checks around the room, opens the small fridge, then looks under the bed. Uncle is curious. Either that, or he's looking for something. He looks to the night table drawer and slowly opens it. Nothing in there. He opens the second drawer below and pulls out a shirt that must have been left behind by a previous guest. It's a brightly colored shirt, well worn but folded neatly. It's the type of shirt I sometimes see being stored in crates at the auction house. I believe it's called tie-dyed. Uncle inspects the shirt thoroughly, rubbing the material between his thumbs and forefingers. He even presses it to his face and holds it to his forehead. He smells it good. He brings it with him as he sits by my body in the iced tub. He puts his head down on the back of his hand against the plastic lip of the tub. Poor Uncle is exhausted. He remains in this position as he finishes his leftover cheeseburger. He returns to the bed, lays back and puts the tie-dyed shirt over his face. He stays like this for some time without moving, just breathing, with the shirt covering his face and his hands to his sides. Now he moans. He breathes in, moans louder, lower. Now he is silent, his breaths getting longer, deeper, the shirt rising and falling with each breath. He turns over onto his stomach as if in a trance. His face is sleepy and doughy like a baby. It rests flat against the bed. He slides the shirt along the bed and against his chest. Two-fisted, he squeezes it to his body and wrinkles up his face. He curls his legs up, making himself into a ball. Now he rocks himself from side to side, first slowly, now faster he goes. He holds the tie-dye shirt tight near his parts. Oh, now he is pumping it into the air as he rocks and bringing it down into his face, which he throws back and forth. He is expressing himself in a very peculiar way for a grown man, seemingly both attacking and cuddling the t-shirt. He is pumped up and down perhaps 10 times now, faster and faster. His eyes are closed, 20 more pumps with his whole body into it now. And suddenly his eyes pop open, and he abruptly stops, jumps to his feet, and he tosses the shirt at the baby blue curtain in front of him.
What do you care? What does it mean?
Now he peeks out the window, barely pulling the curtain back, just enough to peek out. He turns, looks to the carpet, and makes an exasperated fist at it. Something is troubling Uncle. He picks up the t-shirt from the floor, holds it in his arms, and weeps. Is he crying for me? Is he crying for Elijah? Is he crying for some other reason that I just don't understand? Whatever the reason, the t-shirt comforts him. His cries turn into a laugh as he curls up on the bed with the shirt, rests it against his cheek, and falls asleep. It is morning now, just after dawn. Uncle is making the bed and preparing to leave. With the exception of a single shriek coming from somewhere outside in the distance, the night has been extremely quiet. At one point, Uncle woke up to use the bathroom. When he was finished, he sat down beside me and observed my body. He moved my arm up and down, surely noticing some stiffness. He opened one of my eyelids and looked into my eye. His head circled as if he were looking for something behind my eye. And then he touched my eyeball. He pressed it a little more firmly a second time to see what would happen. And his finger went right through my eye, knuckle deep. Then he closed my eyelid again. He smiled as he wiped his finger on his slacks. After Uncle left the bathroom, he removed all of his clothes, except for his large black traditional beaver hat, which I've never seen him remove. And then he did some stretching in total nudity before putting on the tie-dyed t-shirt. He ran his hand round and round the front of it, then traced the designs on the front with his finger. It was at this point when I could clearly see what was printed on the shirt. "Keep truckin'," it said. And below it was a very pleasant parade of dancing bears. A delightful shirt, although not very modest. It looked very tight on him, but he was comfortable enough to sleep in it. He slept peacefully for the rest of the night. Uncle is very careful in returning me to the car, loading me into the back seat, draped in the same white sheet. He is still wearing the tie-dyed shirt. He stands out near the hood of the car and removes his hat. For the first time in my life, I can see his hair, a waterfall of long, matted locks. He gives a grin and flings his hat like a saucer onto the pile of garbage in the parking spot next to us. He slowly walks over to the driver's seat, gets in the car, and then looks back to address me.
Ready to help us all cross over, Joseph?
By way of some holy miracle, I respond. Some not-quite-human sound emanates from my mouth while my tongue hangs out of it. Uncle drives on towards the Rainbow Bridge to Canada with a satisfied look on his face. He turns on the radio. It's a strange song about a man named Casey Jones.
Got on our own behind closed doors. fireworks. Can still burn your fingers. Indoor fireworks. We saw were safe as houses. They're not so spectacular. They don't burn up in the sky. They can dazzle autumn light. I'll bring a tear when the smoke gets in your eye. It's time to tell the truth. These things have to be faced. My fuse is burning out, and all that bad has gone to waste. Don't think for a moment, dear, that we'll ever be through. I'll build a bonfire of my dreams and burn a broken effigy of me and you. Indoor fireworks can still burn your fingers. Indoor fireworks. We swore we're safe as houses. They're not so spectacular. They don't burn up in the sky. They can dazzle heart and light. I'll bring a tear when the smoke gets in your eye. When the smoke gets in your eye. When the smoke gets in your eye.